Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Derek Hollerbach. We're about to be called by Reverend Kevin Annett, who is the founder of the International Court of Common Law. And he has been, just to catch up to speed, suing the Pope, suing Queen Elizabeth for crimes against humanity, including the trafficking of children for the purpose of Freemasonic powers. He's about to call us. Joining me on the phone for the second time, Reverend Kevin Annett. Welcome to the Highway Diary podcast.
Hi, Eric. I'm sorry about the delay in getting to you.
No, that's okay. You know, I'm just worried. You know, if you don't call me, you know, in 5 minutes, I start to think that you got murdered by the Illuminati, you know.
Well, thanks for the concern, but no, I'm okay.
All right, good. Let's jump right into some things here. You obviously are in the middle of a lot of litigation. You know, you're suing the Pope, Queen Elizabeth. Your court cases are going through. You were nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in both 2013 and 2014. I also noticed that there, you know, Pope Francis was nominated in 2014, so a bit of a mixed company that you're with there. How does that work, that the process of being nominated?
Actually, anybody can nominate somebody for any of the Nobel Prizes. In this case, it was three academics in America who put forth the nomination. You know, they base it on evidence and just, you know, review of what the person's been doing in that, but they there are often many people nominated, but they just never get it, of course.
Yeah, and there are 259 nominees in 2013. In 2014, there are 278 nominees, but they don't, like, the Nobel Peace Prize, they don't label it on their website, all of the people who were nominated.
Apparently their rule is you can't you're not allowed to disclose the nominees unless they win. That's my understanding.
It's very interesting, you know, how that works, because, you know, in case some of the people like you, you know, you're very hated by the establishment. You know, some people aren't politically correct to post on the website, you know, especially in
mixed
company.
That's probably why they don't list the nominees, because they have to weed out the people who they don't want people to think have the credibility to get nominated when they don't like them, right?
Right. Well, also, you know, I noticed in 2019, Barack Obama won. I want to point out that in 2009, 5,249 civilian deaths were in Iraq that year. So maybe, you know, you could have won if you were putting up numbers like that, you know? It's just my wry sense of humor. it is weird, the people that you know, I was worried that you came to our conversation a bit late, because a few days ago, on the 13th of September of 2014, your brakes were cut in your car.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to explain that a little bit? What was going on?
Well, it's happened before. I was driving in BC and we just lost control. Fortunately, we're going too fast. But I mean, that's just one of a whole series of things that tend to happen with me, and even more so with the people I work with who are more vulnerable, who don't have the public limelight on me that's needed often to get that protection. So, I think it's more of an indication that we're getting so close to something here that they feel the need to respond more drastically. You know, it isn't just the exposure of genocide in Canada or the complicity of these different popes, but now we're talking about global child trafficking involving criminal syndicates like Drangheta, and which are the mafia basically in Europe. And these people are pretty upset, you know. they've been that we're exposing the stuff. So yeah, naturally they're going to respond.
They're a little perturbed. Hey, they're the mafia. That's what they do. Were you able to back out of the driveway and then to make a K turn? And then it wasn't until you got full speed that you noticed the issue. How did you get out your driveway and make that turn without noticing that the brakes were cut? Were they, like, kind of frayed? You know what I mean?
I don't know how it happened.
Ugh.
I didn't even talk to the mechanic after. The guy who was driving me got a report from the mechanic, and it's all filed and everything, but...
And the mechanic said someone was tampering with this?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Ugh. I've been doing a lot of research, ancillary research as well, and David Cameron came out this week.
Al-Zor is a province in eastern Syria, home to the Al-Shatat tribe. It was captured by ISIL last month. 700 tribesmen were executed, many were beheaded. The vast majority were civilians, Muslims, who refused to take an oath of allegiance to ISIL's Sikh extremists. It is clear that many of them were initially influenced by preachers who claim not to encourage violence, but whose worldview can be used as a justification for it. We know this worldview, the peddling of lies, that 9/11 was somehow a Jewish plot, or that the 7/7 London attacks were staged. To defeat the ideology of extremism, we need to deal with all forms of extremism, not just violent extremism. For governments, there are some obvious ways we can do this. We must ban preachers of hate from coming to our countries. We must proscribe organizations that incite terrorism against people at home and abroad. And we must stop the so-called non-violent extremists from inciting hatred and intolerance in our schools, our universities, and yes, even our prisons. Of course, some will argue that this is not compatible with free speech and intellectual inquiry. But I ask you, would we sit back and allow right-wing extremists, Nazis, or Ku Klux Klansmen to recruit on our university campuses? No. So we shouldn't stand by and just allow any form of non-violent extremism. I am therefore recalling the British Parliament on Friday to secure approval for the United Kingdom to take part in international airstrikes against ISIL in Iraq.
And he was saying that 9/11 truthers and peaceful non-violent protesters are as dangerous as ISIS. And which I just think is a boggling kind of sentence. So non-violent protesters who believe in 9/11 truth. Now, here's the thing about ISIS. The New York Times came out and said that ISIS is funded by the CIA, you know, and so he's saying that 9/11 truthers are as dangerous as ISIS. ISIS, as soon as I saw the first headline, I was like, oh, ISIS is the goddess of Freemasonry. And it just seems like this is their way of pointing to Mother ISIS, Goddess Isis of their beloved Freemasonry, and saying, oh, this is an insurgent thing, obviously funded by and propagandized by the Freemasons, you know?
What then of Isis, the mother of the mysteries? She who was so defiled and desecrated by the profane that her sages and prophets were forced to flee into the wilderness to escape the machinations of the evil one. Is she not the woman clothed with the sun of revelation who flees with her man-child into the wilderness to escape the evil purposes of the great dragon? Well, folks, that's what the Mystery School believes, but I can tell you that's not true. You see, the Mystery School was the original college run by Nimrod in the city of Babylon. And the college was a college of priests who practiced the religion of the sun. The college, the adepts, the initiates, the priests were scattered all over the world when Seth, the son of Noah, came with an army and defeated Nimrod. And this is where the legend really comes from, because Seth chopped Nimrod up into little pieces and scattered him all over the land. In the legend of the Osirian cycle, Osiris was chopped into 14 pieces. Isis came to put him back together again and bring him to life. She could find all the pieces save one, the phallus, or the generative force. It is now known as the lost word of Freemasonry. And the phallus is represented by the obelisk, the monolith. It is the penis of Osiris, the generative force. It represents the lost word of Freemasonry. It represents the Luciferian philosophy. It represents the light, the sun, Lucifer, the intellect.
Well, it's amazing how often their methods work, as if people's memory don't extend past 30 seconds. It's this is a repeat of Al-Qaeda and all the other front groups they've set up. I mean, I don't know why people should be surprised, really.
Yeah. Now, David Cameron also has been implicated in deliberately hiding physical tapes of pedophile investigations. I've come across.
I encountered Kenneth Clark MP, and when I did so, when I met him at Ian Greer's office, he molested me. He put his hand on my penis and kept it there. They haven't spoken to Kenneth Clark MP, and they said they wouldn't be speaking to him because he was above the law. It was videotaped because it was the Cook Report. Mm. We videotaped everything. So we had a jacket camera and we had a suitcase camera. And when I was in the room, the suitcase camera, I think, went on the sofa opposite, and I had the jacket camera on. Now, you can't see anything with the jacket camera because obviously someone comes in and touches you that way, but on the suitcase camera, you saw it. And when I got the tapes back to the, we were staying in the place called the Hyde Park Residence, they played the tapes, and the producers sat there and they watched it, and I watched it. Mm. So I know that they knew that they I'd been molested by Kenneth Clark MP. John Major knew what we were doing, found out about it,
yeah?
And got Carlton Television, Carlton Communications, to buy Central Television to get hold of the Cook Report tapes, to get hold of the tape of Kenneth Clark molesting me in Ian Greer's office as well. So these tapes were taken by Carlton Communications. John Major said, well, we, you know, the scandal was so huge it was going to bring down the Conservative government. Got Carlton Communications, who was a client of Ian Greer at the time, to do him a favour, which was to buy Central Television, which we were planning to do anyway, but much later. Because they were going to buy sort of all the little small independent television stations.
So he could get that film footage.
To get that film footage. Now, the man who did the actual getting of the tapes was Prime Minister David Cameron. He worked for Carlton Communications. He was Michael Green, the CEO's right-hand man, and he handled it. So when the police went to David Cameron to say about questioning Kenneth Clark, guess what he said? No.
Has your research implicated David Cameron?
Not personally, but the thing to understand, we've known for a long time the entire British aristocracy and government are deeply involved. A number of years ago, I was involved in England with what's called the Holly Greig case, where, you know, this young girl, Holly Greig, her father, who had molested her, was let out of prison, and the mother was put in prison for trying to prosecute the dad, because it turned out he was part of a much broader child trafficking network involving members of the government, including the Attorney General. So, yeah, this is what tends to happen when these higher-level child trafficking cults are exposed, and that's exactly what we're doing now with the Ninth Circle and others that are actually involved in child sacrificial rituals. So yeah, it definitely involves these elites at every level of government, church, corporation.
I want to talk a little bit about Freemasonry because I don't think people quite understand that. Like, you know, just like any fraternity in a college, you know, they get paddled, they paddle each other, and then they're like, oh, we're keeping the secret together, you know, that we paddled each other's bums in to get into this fraternity. You know, Freemasonry with the 33rd degrees and then higher level degrees above that, you know, at every level you're doing a more and a more depraved ritually, systematically trying to, you know, boil, you know, if you throw a frog in hot water, it'll jump right out. But if you slowly, gradually erode someone's morals, eventually, you know, 20 years down the line, if they stay involved in Freemasonry, and they have the right blood and they're of a noble stature and they prove to be a sociopath in the lodge, then they start getting into these higher level child sacrificial cults. Is that how you see it?
Well, that's certainly one aspect of it. The thing to understand is that they always try to make it look like the child abuse is happening by very weird, exotic people. It's right in the very system. I mean, we found that the vast majority of children who are trafficked, it's not happening through satanic or Masonic cults, but rather right in the government system, the cells of child welfare. You know, tens of thousands of children go missing right in the government system every year because it's such a huge global industry. It's multi-billion dollar industry, and there's big money behind it. Human trafficking, the same with guns and drugs. You know, so it's in a way they sometimes use the exotic aspects of it to make people think, oh, these are just a few sick weirdos, rather than it being part of the whole system.
Mm. You know, I have talked a lot on my podcast about Aleister Crowley, and he's written books. You know, he got into the Illuminati by writing a book of poetry saying that the way in which to get a more perfect union with Lucifer is to, and he wrote in flowery language, basically, to violate children sexually. And then some weirdo came over his house and, you know, put him into the highest degree of the OTO and then had him run it. You know, and I think, like, once it's written in an occult book like that, and that, you know, they gave him the degree because they said, how did you find out our royal secret that we're all pedophiles? That was that's how they called it, the royal secret.
Well, even the word pedophile is a term designed to brainwash, because it means in Greek friend of children. Philia is one of the Greek three words for love in Greek. So, you know, it's brainwashing people to think this is a benign thing. They like children. This is their way of expressing their love. You know, it's child rape, child murder. It should be called for what it is.
Well, I want to talk about some of your successes, because this past August in Montreal, you facilitated the stopping of a planned ritual abuse, which took place at McGill University. People who were arrested were Carrie Brink and Stephen Holding, and a bishop of Montreal, and two children were also saved from this ritual. Were you there? What did that look like on the ground of the police coming in, or... Were the police involved?
Specially trained unit from Europe that came over. They didn't actually arrest those two people you mentioned. They stopped the event ritual from happening. Those two people had been named as people who were going to participate that night in the ritual. They temporarily held two employees who gave them some information. And they did find, this was in a wealthy home in Outremont, which is a suburb of Montreal, on August 15th. They had the support of some of the Montreal and Ottawa police in doing that. And they did find children's clothing, blood-stained altars, photographic equipment, child pornography, all that stuff on the premises. So clearly it was a site for this depraved activity. And they definitely stopped children being killed that night. So this is the kind of thing we're encouraging people to do more and more of. And in fact, the police seem to be responding now, because soon after that, they arrested over 1,000 people in Europe as part of these child trafficking cults.
Yeah, I saw that. Between September 13th and 23rd, Europol launched Operation Archimedes, where 10,027 individuals were arrested, 599 kilograms of cocaine, 200 kilograms of heroin, 1.3 tons of cannabis, and 30 children were saved.
Police officers from 28 EU nations worked together on the operation with six partner countries. The idea was to tackle organized criminal activity, such as human trafficking, drug smuggling and arms trading. Europol director Rob Wainwright explains.
What we've done in this operation is brought together the combined forces of law enforcement community to do it, working together over 9 days, carrying out over 250 operational actions in 300 towns, cities, airports, ports right around Europe to dismantle the criminal infrastructure that is preying on our citizens and our economy every day. I think in terms of the scale and impact of this operation, it ranks as the single largest coordinated assault on organised crime that we've seen in Europe.
Arrests were made by officers from all 28 member states, as well as officers from Australia, Colombia, Norway, Serbia, Switzerland and the US.
Do you see this as that these people that were that you got in Montreal, although they evaded arrest by mysterious means, probably because they got friends in high places, but do you see them turning, or do you think that these 1,027 people are going to be scapegoated or let out the back door and not charged with these things? Do you see this? Where do you see this investigation going?
Most of those people are the small fish, you know, the people who transport and hide the children, the ones who provide the funding. You know, it's like, if you do this enough, though, you start finding the links, and this is what we've been doing over the years, tracing these links. It definitely is a result of the work we're doing. We know that because some of the police who we've been working with in Belgium have been using the evidence we've gathered, and they use those in arresting the people. So it shows that it's having an effect. I noticed in the Toronto newspaper the other day, the Toronto police were describing 'Ndrangheta, the mafia syndicate that we've been naming for a number of months now. you know, you find this time and again, where you do something and then it's echoed very soon by somebody in the system because they know they have to respond in some way. So it shows people, you know, when they say there's nothing you can do, it's not true. You can really have an impact.
Right. We also, I've been having in preparation for this interview, I've been having a series of anxiety attacks as I look through your evidence, as I look at, the stuff that you're presenting. And you mentioned this last time you were on my podcast, but, children were hunted by the royal family in Brussels with George Soros and the current Netherlands Prime Minister Mark Rutte. We're not only talking about rituals, but we're talking about hunting parties, like beyond billionaire things that they just do for their pleasures, you know.
Well, that's been described for quite a while by eyewitnesses. These are people who grew up in these satanic cults, and also in the case of Anne-Marie van Billenberg and her testimony, along with Toast Nienhaus, another Dutch woman. People can watch these at itccs.org, our tribunal website. Both women describe how they were used for blackmail purposes. They bring, you know, political and other leaders to these events to be able to blackmail them, like the way the CIA used child prostitutes to blackmail politicians in America. Same thing. She said all of these royal family members, George Soros and others, fairly wealthy people, were at these events, and they literally hunted down naked children in the woods and killed them and then cut off their penises as hunting trophies.
Where, for instance, Prince Johan Friso, his steady psychiatrist, Gus Barrault Dumont, I recognized Mabel Mrs. Smith. She was there with an old, steady man. I think it was George Soros. I recognized Donner, a former minister of the law department, at this moment viceroy of the Netherlands. I recognized Ernst Hirsch Balling, a very important former minister of justice. I recognized A. van den Emster. He was for years the head of all judges in the Netherlands. I recognized Dick Berlijn, the former head of the military department in the Netherlands. I recognized a journalist, a very important journalist, Gerlof Leistra, of the journal The Elsevier. I recognized Carla Irades. At present, she is president of the court in Amsterdam, a judge. I recognized Mark Rutte. He's at this moment minister president of the Netherlands. I recognized Geert Wilders. He is at this moment the head of the political party PVV in the Dutch parliament. There were about 50 people every time I was taken there. I have been taken there 3 times. I have seen every time a child was killed. And I have seen 2 boys killed. I have seen 1 girl killed. I presume those children were Netherlands children. I presume those children came from the detention centers of the Netherlands.
That was described in detail by Anne-Marie van Billenberg. So I've interviewed her. I've met these people firsthand. They're all legitimate. She's a former lawyer. I mean, these are credible people. These aren't wingnuts, right?
Yeah. So you've also done the Follow the Money investigation, and you've uncovered the Cargill Corporation. It's highly involved. They're kind of like a giant food company. They're like Monsanto. How did you follow the money to the Cargill company?
Well, 2 ways. We have sources who had come to us with evidence that these rituals were being held in the corporate headquarters in Wayzata, Minnesota, just outside Minneapolis. And also an eyewitness who had been taken to the Cargill headquarters when she was a young girl. She's in her 30s now. She said it happened in the 1990s. There were a number of corporate executives there. They had military and police protection. I mean, this is the largest privately owned company in the world. And, you know, it's got a lot of money at its disposal, like the Vatican, so it can buy that kind of protection. So, yeah, these are eyewitnesses. It's being corroborated from a number of different sources. You see, what I found early on when I was first doing the investigation into the Indian boarding schools in Canada was that a lot of the apparent sexual abuse was really a cover for a lot of experimentation going on with a captive population, in this case, Indian kids in schools, where they were virtually prisoners. Their parents couldn't do anything about it. They had no legal rights. These kids were used continually in Indian hospitals in both the U.S. and Canada in mind control experiments, behavior mod, you know, sterilization programs, drug testing, right back into the 1930s and 40s and stuff was going on. So behind this cover of rampant abuse, they were using kids that way. One of the things, if a children is a child below a certain age is raped and violated at a young enough age, they start becoming MPD, multiple personality disorder, and they need that in the in creating sleeper agents. In the MKUltra experiments, they needed people who had already been programmed as multiple personality types. And so there's a reason behind all the rampant abuse is to create that at a young age so these kids can then be used as robots for all sorts of purposes. So it's part of that whole MKUltra military experimentation that goes back over 50 years.
Mm. This past week on a show called This American Life, they did a story on Carmen Segarra, who was a Federal Reserve employee, and they, you know, the Federal Reserve is in charge of overseeing the company Goldman Sachs, and she was literally, she just did a report, she handed it to them that said that Goldman Sachs does not have a policy on conflicts of interest. They don't have a policy to dissuade them from engaging in conflicts of interest. So she handed that to her boss, and then they said, listen, can you back away from this language?
Do you have the policies a definition of a conflict of interest and what that is and what that means?
During her examination, Carmen asked Goldman's head of conflicts if their policy had a definition of what a conflict is. And Goldman's head of conflicts answered,
no.
Okay.
Not let it go. He asks her over and over to change her conclusion, repeating at least 7 times some version of, why do you have to say they don't have a policy?
Why do we have to say they don't have a policy? They have one. You can say it's a miserable one.
Silva and Carmen go back and forth. Finally, after more than 30 minutes of this, Silva asks one last time,
can you tell me again, why do you have to say there's no policy?
Can you tell me again, why do you have to say there's not a policy? Why can't you just say there's a very poor policy? Carmen says she was desperate to get out of that office. She relented.
Okay. I can work with you on that. I hear your plea. I hear your plea.
Okay, I can work with you on that, she says. I hear your plea. I hear your plea. I can say it's a poor policy. Only she doesn't stop there. She can't help herself.
Between you and me and these 4 walls?
Between you and me and these 4 walls, she says?
No way. No way this is a policy.
No way. No way this is a policy.
I will work with you.
I will work with you, she says. I will say they have a very poor policy.
But professionally, I cannot agree.
But professionally, I cannot agree. At this point, you can hear the life drain out of Silva's voice. He wearily tells her that he doesn't want to put her in a position where she has to say something she doesn't agree with. The conversation was over.
All right. Thanks for coming in.
All right, Silva says. Thanks for coming in.
And then she was fired from the Federal Reserve. And she actually, you know, recorded these tapes, you know. I don't know. It's just, I just see this. It just reminded me of that, you know, the obviously Goldman Sachs owns the Federal Reserve, and the lawyers are the ones that keep tabs on any reports that go by that could implicate the situation, you know. Mm-hmm. I also came across these statistics that I want to put it through. It would cost $60 billion to pay for every college tuition in America. It would cost $175 billion to end poverty worldwide, and the Iraq war cost $1.7 trillion.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's right.
I mean, like, so what is America, like, how, just look at that. If any normal person became president of the United States, they would go, okay, let me end poverty today. Let me make tuition free tomorrow, and let's get out of Iraq. But there's such a cognitive dissonance where, look, $1.7 trillion is spent on drone murder in Iraq, you know? So it's really not surprising to me when I go down this rabbit hole and I start to discover that they're complete Satanists and child murderers. Why not? Look at the numbers, you know? I'm sorry, I'm just going on a little. So what do you think is like the spiritual metadata behind what's going on? Is there like a spiritual war going on underneath the physical manifestations? Do you see it as?
Oh, very much. I think this is a spiritual battle, yeah. I think it's a fight for the control of the human race, the mind, heart, and soul. And the best way to control people is you mess them up and traumatize them at a young age so that they're incapable of refusing authority or orders. And, I mean, this is a tried and true method. You know, the Roman army used to serially rape any conquered population. The Roman Catholic Church, which is the direct descendant of the Roman Empire, they do the same thing. I mean, it's thousands of year old policy. That's how empires rule.
Ugh. You know, also I've come across, you point out that Pope Benedict is also known as Joseph Ratzinger. Pope Francis is also known as Jorge Bergoglio. Why do the popes and the bishops kind of have revolving names? They have aliases, they have public names. Is this just a method of confusion?
The idea that they're somehow more than human, you know, this whole myth that there's this guy closer to God than everybody else, and he's the kind of bridge to heaven, and you got to obey him. It's really an emperor worship. It's really, the whole thing about Catholicism is not really Christianity. It's emperor worship, because Christians say no, we believe in Christ, not this Pope who has replaced Christ, and so it's part of that whole mystique of power and that. You can't just call the guy Jorge, right? Suddenly he's got to become this new name. So, yeah, I think it's primarily that.
Do they get the new name when they become Pope? They give him Pope Benedict?
Yeah, they're elected and they get to choose their name.
Hmm.
Elected by a bunch of senile farce called cardinals.
Right. I've been also following, it seems like that your work has also kind of woken people up within the BBC, because Jimmy Savile case is being exposed by the BBC all the time. You know, he was on the BBC all through the 70s. He had these weird, creepy children shows.
Hey, guys and girls out there. Oh, welcome to the Tweenie Chart Countdown. Today you're going to hear all the Tweenie's favorite songs. Ooh. And first on stage is young Milo. Ooh. He's chosen this number as his favorite song because he likes to move and dance. Ooh. So, at number 4 in the Tweenie's charts is One Finger, One Thumb, Keep Moving.
You've got to be definite, you understand?
Definite?
Yeah, what you've got to do, you've got to say definite things, you know. I mean, don't just stand there. I mean, say, give the girl an invitation.
Come on. Let us in and we'll kick the door down.
That's right, let us in and we'll kick the door down.
Let us in and I'll spread the rumour of what happened in Gateway's car park.
Right, you'll spread the rumour of what happened in Gateway's car park.
You already have.
Now, listen, lads, I brought you the girl to the door. Now then, you just... I mean, operate, you know what I mean? Go on. Sock it to him. Sock it to him, lads. Come on. Hey! Get off my feet.
All right, I'll sing Judy, please.
No, I'm sorry, you can't come in, Greg.
Why not?
No!
Why not?
I said so.
Oh, God. Well, Uncle Briggs can come on.
Because I don't trust you.
Don't trust
you? You don't trust these lads?
No.
What's wrong with these lads?
Plenty.
What do you mean? You're trustworthy lads, aren't you?
Yeah,
not
yeah, two of
them,
aren't they? Eh? Do you have this trouble with older girls?
Well,
no, only a few, you know.
Only a few?
Yeah.
Well, here's me with the Savile's Travels machine at the ready, and you're on Savile's Travels, and here's the Crowthorne lads operating their Casanova technique, which has left them on the outside freezing cold, and her on the inside.
My
Nice and warm. With me as the chaperone.
Another story, and the Jimmy Savile sex scandal at the BBC and with the police is rumbling on. Seven times, apparently, the police let Jimmy Savile off. That's the headlines of many of the newspapers today. But this was raised on Wednesday by Tom Watson in the House of Commons at Prime Minister's Questions. And if you listen carefully, you can hear a lot of the Conservative people at the very beginning, when Tom Watson stands up to speak, making sort of animal noises at him. But anyway, let's hear what he had to say.
Watson! Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The evidence file used to convict paedophile Peter Wrighton, if it still exists, contains clear intelligence of a widespread paedophile ring. One of its members boasts of his links to a senior aide of a former Prime Minister, who says he could smuggle indecent images of children from abroad. The leads were not followed up, but if the files still exist, I want to ensure that the Metropolitan Police secure the evidence, re-examine it, and investigate clear intelligence suggesting a powerful paedophile network linked to Parliament and Number 10.
You know, and he would just kind of like subtly allude to being a pedophile in like offhanded ways. And, you know, like when you look back at it, he was also a member of the Ninth Circle. He could go in and out of Buckingham Palace. He would just wave to the guards and they'd let him in. Like, that's how friendly he was to the Queen and Prince Charles and all these people. Can you describe what's going on with the Jimmy Savile case? I mean, this all happened after he died, so it's, I mean, you can't really charge him with anything, but...
Well, I mean, no, Savile was one fish in the barrel, but I mean, they tend to kind of focus on individuals like that to make everybody think, oh, there's a sick, depraved person. He's the only one running around. Well, he's reflective of a whole class of people who operate in these worlds, and, very close to the so-called royal family. You know, but I mean, like I say, a lot of this has been coming out in the last few years. More and more people are waking up to how this is part of the very system itself. It isn't just some weird aberration.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, also, the 2002 London Olympics, the opening ceremony, speaking of what you were saying earlier about the institutional child trafficking and stuff, the opening ceremony of the 2012 Winter Olympic Games in London, you see children in hospital beds with terrified expressions on their face and these weird vampiric like gestures walking around who are kind of like Jimmy Savile, who had a key to all kinds of homes for orphans, you know, and a very specific policy when it came to Jimmy Savile, that he was allowed to go into anyone's room at any time of day, whatever. Like, why would you invent a policy like that? And then they're kind of like, they're so blatant about what they're doing that they put it into an opening ceremony of the Olympics and about, you know, what's going on here?
Oh, no, I mean, that's the thing. It's hidden in plain sight. This stuff is so obvious and out there. You know, it's never a problem of lack of evidence. It's that people find it so hard to believe because they've been raised to think to a certain way, and they've been raised that their own feelings are so numbed that, you know, I find giving talks about child abuse and child trafficking, you see people's eyes glaze over. They don't want to hear about it. They don't really have any feeling or empathy for it because that's been beaten out of them at a young age themselves, and it's a really difficult issue to get people involved in because of that, you know, and other stuff.
Yeah. It's almost, I keep hearing it's like part of their religion, these Satanists, where they want to put it in your face and then do it anyway. You know, they want to almost leave you a few breadcrumbs to get to the truth, and then, but they're so confident that, you know, they've brainwashed you properly that you know, you can't do anything about it, or, you know.
Yeah, no, pretty much.
I read a story today that there's a Volkswagen that gets 300 miles per gallon, but it's been banned in America because it's too efficient. At the 2014 Geneva Motor Show, a car gets 900 horsepower and it goes 373 miles on a 50-gallon tank of salt water.
The Quant eSport Limousine is a full electric car, powered with a flow battery called NanoFlow Cell. The principle of their system is like the same on a redox flow cell principle, means we have a chemical process via two electrolytes, positive, negative charged, and through a membrane you create energy. We have four engines to 170 kilowatt power, it means 920 horsepower, an acceleration from 2.8 seconds to 100, a maximal speed from over 300 kilometers per hour. And each wheel has more than 2,900 newton meter torque.
I'm obsessed with the fact that in 1816 the typewriter came out, and in 1816 the internal combustion engine was invented, and we've watched the typewriter go to the electric typewriter, go to the computer, go to the iPhone, and in 1816 we saw the internal combustion engine do nothing. You know, we're still driving around in the fermented brains of dinosaurs, you know? It's just like, is that the most efficient way to get around? It seems like all of humanity is being suppressed. The potential that our species can reach is being suppressed by these Satanists. So where do you see... Do you see kind of a tidal wave of your work? I mean, the Europol investigation. Is there any... Has anyone gotten in contact with you and said what the next step of this investigation is? Or are they going to go after bigger fish? What's going on?
Well, I mean, it's growing by leaps and bounds. You're seeing all of our stuff being quoted now in the mainstream corporate media. We reached our critical mass because we've just got so much of the evidence out there and we don't stop. So, like I say, people can follow this at itccs.org. And it's turning a corner, definitely. We've now got groups in 21 countries that are working to set up these common law courts to prosecute these people. We've got citizen arrests being performed on known child raping priests. It's really beginning to grow, and so I really urge people to check it out, get involved.
Yeah, and also your other website is hiddennolonger.com if you want to educate yourself on the material that you're putting out. Also, kevinannette.com. You are also trying to get the basis of common law, and you're trying to make a new state of Canada as the Republic of Kanata. You're trying to start the whole country over again of Canada. You're biting off quite a big thing here.
Well, no, it's really just following through on the fact that the Crown of England, which still runs Canada, has been disestablished as a body because of its criminal conviction in February 2013 by the Common Law Court in Brussels. Criminal bodies don't have the right to be legitimate governments, and under international law, they don't have the right to levy taxes or do any of that if they've been engaged in crimes against humanity. So we're simply following through in that and saying, well, since the authority of the Crown is now null and void in Canada, obviously people need a new deal, a new arrangement. And that's why groups are getting together to try to convene a convention to establish a republic in Canada where the ties to the monarchy are formally severed. And they have a responsible, you know, kind of lawful government for the first time in their history. So that's the idea of doing what America and Ireland and other countries have done to hell with the British Empire. Mm.
Yeah, Iceland as well, you know. They just said to the bankers, get out of here, and they started arresting them. And then, boy, did, you know, why can't we just do that everywhere? They're holding down.
Yep.
You know, money seems to be, like, there seems to be a cult power in money. Like, you know, you print the Queen of England's face on a piece of paper, and then all of a sudden you have people killing each other for it. These pieces of paper, you know. I heard someone say one time, do you know how much occult power you need to have in your face in order to, you know, have people kill themselves for pieces of paper with your face on it, you know? Do you think that their occult power is somehow trying to pump up, like, currency, you know?
Well, it's hard to say. I think these occult networks extend far...
We just got disconnected. And that's how the podcast ended. Just like that. The phone got disconnected. I tried and tried to get back to him. I'm saying this a week later. I kept emailing him. He didn't get back to me. Who knows what happened? Maybe a wizard cut his phone lines. Maybe he had to go because the Pope was being chased down the 405 in a white Ford Bronco. Whatever happened, he's not interested in talking anymore. So, that's my podcast with Reverend Kevin Annette. You know, he had a lot of bold claims. Go to itccs.org and check it out. You know, certainly the Europol arrested some people based on what he said. Lower level people. Certainly, he stopped some kind of ritual abuse. Some old lady gave her testimony. There's pictures of her coming off the plane with the Queen. She's in the Netherlands, seen a lot of weird occult ritual murders. And, you know, who knows about any of this stuff? I'm just trying to report this weird guy that I've been following on the internet give the most explosive testimony possible. That's another episode of Highway Diaries. Later.